Welcome to episode 82 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzewski back from North Carolina here, back in Erie, and Alan Olson joining me again, as always. Hello.
Hey, Eric. How you doing?
Not bad. Went to North Carolina to try to play golf, and it was 41, and rained, and overcast, and cold, and windy, and great. So.
Oh, that's not good.
We got 2 weeks of shows to cover this week, so we're going back 2 weeks. Jeff Ogilvy knocked off Tiger Woods to win the WGC CA Championship. Basically didn't do anything. It was a Monday finish. Didn't do anything. Stayed at 17 under, which is about where he started the day, it seemed. Nobody really made a run, except some Vijay Singh, Jim Furyk, Retief Goosen, all closed with 68, so they came back from a little ways back. Jeff Ogilvy had a good start to his fourth round, but then when it came around to Monday, not so much.
Yeah, he had just a big enough lead to be able to hold everybody off.
He actually duffed a chip on a par three and then chipped in for a par.
Yeah, so, it could have been a lot different if his ball doesn't hit the pin.
Yeah, didn't have a great day, but held on at 17 under. Adam Scott had a chance, but really played horribly. Tiger Woods, horrible shot at the last hole, like a 9 iron or something. Comes up 30 feet short of the green, 30 feet short of the pin anyway. Didn't make a few putts coming down the stretch. A little charge, but he really needed earlier birdies than he got.
Yeah, it was surprising how many birdie putts Tiger missed at the WGC.
I think the first three putts they didn't show on the air were Tiger Woods lipping out in the fourth round. He makes one or two of those, and he's right there. He finishes two strokes back, tied for fifth. Tiger Woods' streak ends at 5 PGA Tour events, 7 worldwide events, and 6 if you're one of those people that counts either the Target World Challenge or the Dubai. So not quite getting close to Byron Nelson once again. We'll relieve a little pressure from Tiger at the Masters, since the Masters would have been right around event number 9 or 10 in a row. I don't think he was thinking of that.
No.
As some suggested.
And he wasn't trying to bag it either.
No. Greg Kraft bagged a PGA Tour win at the Puerto Rico, whatever. It's the opposite field event held opposite the WGC CA. Congratulations to Greg Kraft for winning the... Yeah. They made a point on the 19th hole last week to say, you know, this is like finishing second in the championship flight of your club championship and getting nothing, while the guy that wins the D flight wins a free 1-year membership and a good parking spot. Kind of stinks. So, you know, the guys who finish second in the WGC get basically nothing. I mean, you know, they get some money, but whatever. And then Greg Kraft swoops in, plays against nobody, and wins a 2-year exemption.
Yeah, there's that whole opposite field thing.
It's a bit bizarre. Why not maybe a 1-year exemption?
I could see that. I could see that.
It didn't get him into the Masters. Opposite field event wins won't get you into the Masters. So at least there's some. Lorena Ochoa wins and successfully defends her Safeway title. It's in Superstition Mountain, Arizona. Really not. She came back. She shot a 666. Finishes at 22 under, so kind of a low scoring week. The closest to her, though, Lee at 15 under. And I don't know which Lee. One of the 15 Korean Lees out there, I'm sure. This one happened to be Ji Young Lee.
I didn't even know the LPGA was playing.
They have a major next week. That's the thing. They had their first major the week before the Masters, which is next week.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's just completely under the radar. This is the four majors are pretty much the only thing televised.
They're not on TV, so. Yeah, that's the problem. The LPGA is not on TV, so.
Ochoa dominates again. What else is new,
right? This week on TV was Andres Romero winning his first PGA Tour event in something like 6 or 12 tries. Andres Romero, you will remember from last year, had a chance to win the British Open, hit a 2-iron or something out of a nasty lie on the 18th hole at Carnoustie and dunked it in the water, then won the next week at some prestigious European Tour event, now has a 2-year exemption on the PGA Tour, had already qualified for the Masters, otherwise he would be in based on this win, but he had already qualified because he finished 4th or whatever in the British Open, so he's already in the Masters. But he could be a sleeper hit in the Masters. I mean, when he gets going, he plays well. He's got length, he's got some putting touch. He posted a number and nobody could do anything to touch it.
That was kind of the wild thing on Sunday. I mean, I'm flipping back between that and basketball.
It was
he's
boring.
Done 3 hours before the leaders.
Right. And nobody came and close. Just, it was boring.
Yeah. He's done 3 hours before the leaders, and then all you do is you just see one train wreck after another.
Woody Austin dunks it on the last hole and chokes his guts out. He flat out played like a dog the last 9 holes, and he's not afraid to admit it in his words. We got to see Woody beating the crap out of his thigh after he missed about a 2-foot putt.
Yeah, you know, Peter Larnard left a birdie putt short on 17.
Yeah, that was a par putt.
Or par putt, I'm sorry. Yeah,
left. Yeah, he left about a 5-foot par putt about 4 inches short. Finished 2 hours and 50 minutes before the rest of play, Andres Romero. So, had a long time to sit around.
Yeah, I think NBC was wasting time. They kept showing him, hey, this is him not watching TV. This is him playing with his laptop.
This is him playing Tiger Woods PGA Tour on his laptop to see if he can catch himself. It was boring. The guy finished. I mean, we had 3 hours of coverage, and since he was done 3 hours before anything was done, I think they showed him punting out on 18. That was about it.
Yeah, so. It was pretty bad. Just about everybody that had a chance just gagged on himself.
So, well, 13 under par, 275 gets it done for Andres Romero. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I mark my titles with a VJ.
I mark my ball with the Greek symbol for courage, the lambda sign.
I throw my initials on it.
Three crosses around the script.
This is my boy's initials, TP.
I mark my titles with my initials, Olin Orange.
For 20 years, a black dot over the T.
With three black dots.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your titleist.
How do you mark your titleist?
Welcome back. Our forum topic of the week is the U.S. Open Reality Golf, Breaking 100. This thread was started by Nevitz88. I think we've talked about this before, but right. We've got the big Golf Digest, NBC, I don't know if you want to call it reality golf show, with some lucky guy getting to play Torrey Pines on a Masters setup.
It's down to five now.
Down to five. We can vote. Will he break 100?
No.
No.
The guys, you know, this is based on Tiger Woods saying a 10 handicapper wouldn't break 100 at Oakmont. None of these guys are 10 handicappers, and they're not playing at Oakmont, so it has very little to do with Tiger Woods' suggestion other than to spur the idea. We have John Atkinson, an 8 handicap. We have Phil Dembour, if I'm mispronouncing it, sorry, 7.9 index. Eric Norton, a 4.7. I like that guy because he spells his name E-R-I-K the proper way. A 4.7. He also has the lowest index, so has the best chance. Matt Rice, police officer, at about a 10. And Ross Troicki, who used to fly FA-18s, but now flies for FedEx, a 6.4 index. You know, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of pressure from the cameras and stuff. Like, who cares? It's not like there's going to be a gallery.
No.
You know, it's a camera. So what? It's an inanimate object with a guy holding it. Whatever. And I honestly don't think there's much for the celebrities, too. I don't think there's much there with them. Tony Romo is playing. I think he has a chance to break 100. He's reportedly qualified for the U.S. Open, or tried to qualify for the U.S. Open last year. He had to be a 1.4 index or better, so I think he'll break 100. Justin Timberlake's reportedly a good golfer. I'm still not so sure. We'll see. And Matt Lauer, couldn't care less.
Yeah.
What's the over-under on people breaking 100 in that foursome? I'm going to say 1.5 because I think one will do it, and so I'm going to take the under on 1.5.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Tony Romo and maybe somebody shoots 98.
It's not that hard. It's a par 71. So if you bogey every hole, you got 89. That gives you 10 shots to play with, meaning you can double bogey 10 holes. So, I mean, if you play for a bogey on every hole, maybe you get a par here and there. Most of the time, you'll get a double. You still can do it, but I don't know that they're going to have that thought process going. So
no, I just think, I mean, anytime this guy hits it into the rough, he's got to hack it out back into the fairway. You know, he's not going to be able to pull it. You know, what some of these pros, I mean, the pros have to do the same thing. And they're, you know, this best of my knowledge, none of these four hit as far as the PGA pros either. So
that's going to be a big problem too. I mean, they may not reach most of the par fours, but that's where they'll take their bogeys and hopefully maybe get up and down a few times. And I'm still saying one guy breaks 100.
I give it to Tony Romo, but as far as the one of the five finalists, no. Good luck. I hope they do it, but I don't see it happening.
The guy with the 4.7, the Eric fellow, he has the best chance. But
that's just because you like his name.
He has the lowest index.
Oh, okay.
4.7, you know, on a U.S. Open course, if he can be four times worse than his index, that's getting a bad bogey on every hole. So he has a chance. 1.5, I still say it's an over-under number. We should get equal number of bets that say one and under and equal number that say over.
Good luck.
Yeah, you decide during this commercial break, and we'll be back to finish up with our beating ball segment.
I mark my tie list with a black line and a red line. Black dot over the nine.
A red line through the side stamp.
With a dot between the tie list and the number.
With Korean flag.
I mark my ball with a kangaroo. Does anybody else do it like this?
Check it out.
out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your titleist.
How do you mark your titleist?
This is our beating balls segment, and we're going to lead off with someone who beat some balls on the range. Michelle Wee had to withdraw from the Safeway International on Friday, or last week, because she injured her wrist practicing out of the rough on a driving range, accidentally.
Was she golfing with Phil Mickelson?
I don't know. She accidentally injured her wrist hitting out of the rough on the driving range. This is what I don't get. I mean, a ball that was embedded in thick rough on the driving range. What? I don't know. I mean, pros, you know, and better amateurs and stuff will practice hitting balls out of the rough. But where's the accidentally part come in? That's the part I don't get. It says she accidentally hit the ball. It doesn't say she accidentally injured herself.
Right.
She accidentally hit a ball that was embedded in thick rough. What driving range
has thick rough?
I don't know. Off to the side they can, you know, I mean. But how do you accidentally hit it boggles the mind. Whatever. She needed to have a good year this year. Or just say, you know what, I'm taking 2 years off. I'll be back ready to commit myself fully. And this is kind of, you know, walking down the middle. This is more silliness. David Lederbetter supposedly has gotten through and to say, do not play her until she's fully ready. Don't play her if her wrist bugging her at all because loss of confidence, so on. So maybe that's this. Maybe it really wasn't hurting that bad, but rather than go out there with that weighing on her, they decided not to further damage her ego and her mindset.
At this point, there's that physical component of the wrist, but I'm just wondering how much of it now is mental, where even if the wrist is fine, in the back of her mind, she's always going to think it's tweaked.
Perhaps. She's also appears to be dating a basketball player. And what's disturbing here, they show a picture. It's one of the Lopez brothers. She's dating the one that doesn't have a girl's name, I guess. She's dating Alex Lopez, not Brooke. I guess both could be girls' names, but anyway. What's disturbing, though, is that...
He's 7 foot, she's 6 foot.
No, the caption in the story says, the Lopez brothers not only collect Disney figurines, but they have an unhealthy fascination with Michael Jackson.
That's a little weird.
Oh, I'm sorry. Michelle Wee is dating Robin. Robin, the boy. So they all have girls' names. Robin, Alex, and Brooke. But they're all boys, and they all play basketball. And so, yes, Robin is the one. Yeah. He also likes Mariah Carey. I don't know what's worse, Michelle Wee's wrist or their taste in anything.
Hobbies.
Yeah. Well, we'll move on because I really don't care about Michelle Wee's dating life.
I wonder if her parents go with.
Yeah, it's like a double date.
Ugh.
BJ, Robin, Michelle, and whatever BJ's wife is named. We don't hear about her mom. Anyway, Bubba Watson, I caught this live, cussed out Steve Elkington during the Golf Channel's coverage on Friday. It was funny because they didn't kill the mic and he said the F word and the A word several times, including kiss my beep, and he's been beeping doing that. He beeped and did it yesterday, and he's still beeping doing it or something. Steve Elkington apparently walked or made noise or did something during Bubba Watson's pre-shot routine, and while he was over the ball, he had enough of it. He said he did it all day yesterday, meaning Thursday when they're paired together, and he's doing it now, Friday. After the round, what's odd is they talk in the scorer's tent after Elkington refused to shake Bubba Watson's hand, and then Bubba Watson apologizes. But Steve, we don't hear a thing from Steve Elkington.
Yeah, we're only getting one side of the story here.
So I'm wondering if the veteranship of the PGA Tour, you know, prevailed upon Bubba in some way to shut his mouth. Or maybe it wasn't, tell him it wasn't worth picking a fight with Steve Elkington because Steve's an ass, or what? I don't know. Because it seems a little odd for someone to say, you did it all day yesterday, you're doing it now, stop it, cut that crap out, and then, oh, sorry for my outburst. Obviously, there was something going on.
Yeah, it was weird because it was like...
And Bubba's a lefty, so, you know, I could see Steve perhaps, you know, having an excuse and saying, you know what, I'm used to playing against righties, so if a guy's off to the right, usually you can walk up the fairway because you're behind them. Bubba's a lefty, so you're actually in his field of view. But we didn't get anything from Steve, so
no.
I'm not sure what happened, but I don't think Steve Elkington is blameless here, and I think Bubba Watson may have fell on his sword a little bit.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, for Bubba to go from one end where he's cussing him out, and you can hear it.
He's on the offensive.
To him going, well, I heard some movement, and who knows what it was.
It's a bit bizarre.
Yeah, it's definitely a 180.
I've heard some things about Steve Elkington's gamesmanship and things, so yeah, I'm not going to put all the blame on Bubba. I applaud the fact that he apologized immediately for anyone that heard or saw his cussing.
Which doesn't always happen.
It's something Tiger Woods didn't do when asked about the swearing at the photographer and threatening to break his neck if he takes another picture. Tiger actually kind of defended his actions there, which was a little sad, really. So I applaud Bubba for apologizing, but I don't know that the apology was even really necessary, except for perhaps using language that was stronger. I think he perhaps still had a right to be upset, though.
Oh, absolutely.
I guess only those two will know. We're not getting a story from Steve, so.
Unfortunately not.
Finally, in our last story here in Beating Balls, Stuart Sink was disqualified, or rather disqualified himself, after falling victim to a USGA rule that was instituted last October regarding bunker play. Basically, it's a weird one. His ball was outside of a fairway bunker, but he stood inside the bunker to play his shot. He hit it into a greenside bunker. Then his caddy raked that bunker that he was standing in before he played the greenside bunker shot. That's a penalty because he had not played an initial shot from the bunker, so he could be seen to be testing through his caddy the condition of the bunker. Right.
So, yeah, I mean, this one leaves me speechless. I mean,
this is like a loophole in reverse, because if he had hit from the fairway bunker into a greenside bunker, his initial shot would have been played and he could have raked the fairway bunker just fine. Or if he had hit from one greenside bunker to another greenside bunker, he could have raked the original greenside bunker because he would have already hit a shot from the bunker. But because he hadn't actually played a shot from the bunker, he was testing the condition of the sand prior to hitting his initial shot from sand. Never mind the fact that fairway bunkers are usually conditioned slightly differently than greenside bunkers anyway. So anyway, a loophole in reverse, and I think kind of a silly rule, and I think it'll probably be changed back to something that makes a little more sense, especially since the caddy was the one that did the raking.
Well, yeah, it's
what's
not
the
like...
caddy going to say? It's kind of sandy. And a little floppy with the sand is brown. I saw that when I was raking it very much. Yeah. It's a little wet too. But you have to dig down 2 inches for that.
I mean, with these guys hitting in the fairway bunkers, and then, you know, if they hit from the fairway, whatever, the round's already lasting 5.5 hours. Now we got to let the caddy sit there, wait. Stuart Sink's got to walk up, hit the ball. Okay, now you can rake.
Dumb rule. I think it'll get changed. Bravo for him for calling himself on it, even though it's stupid. Because if nothing else, he brought attention to a stupid rule, and perhaps it'll be changed because of it.
I hope so.
Not that he still wasn't playing that well anyway, so who cares?
No, it was quite amazing, all the quote-unquote people higher up in the rankings who...
Steve Tricker, Jim Furyk, top
got to go
guys.
Home for the weekend.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
It was a bad week for golf. Including in North Carolina. So there.
Boo hiss.
That does it for episode 82 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. If you want to check out our show notes, do so online at thesandtrap.com. Post something in the forum or get back to us by email. For Alan Olson, this is Eric Borzeski saying, warm, warm, warm. I just want some warm weather. Thank you.
I just don't want snow in my driveway anymore. Thank you.